The Contra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are strapping in for what feels like a complete intellectual remapping of world history. We're diving into Peter Frankopan's huge work, The Silk Roads, A New History of the World.
Yeah, this book is, well, it's kind of a gut punch to the way most of us learn history, isn't it? Frankopan basically asks you to, you know, throw out that comfortable, linear, Eurocentric timeline.
The one we all got in school.
Exactly, and start seeing the world from its true historical axis, Asia and the Middle East, these connective routes.
It really challenges that core assumption that the West was always, you know, destined to be the center of power. He argues that for literally millennia, the actual center of gravity, the power, the wealth, the culture, it wasn't in Greece or Rome or Paris. It was along this massive dynamic network connecting East and West.
And understanding this isn't just academic, it's absolutely essential context for modern geopolitics. I mean, really, if you want to make sense of the 21st century, things like the rise of China's Belt and Road Initiative, which is literally called a new Silk Road.
Right. The name says it all.
Or if you want to grasp why there are these persistent, devastating conflicts in places like Afghanistan, Iraq, you have to understand that the center of global power is actually shifting back to where it was for most of history. It's a return.
Okay, so who is this academic making such a bold claim? I mean, rewriting 2,000 years of history. Why should we listen to him? Peter Frankopan, he's a pretty major academic force. Professor of Global History at Oxford, director of the Oxford Center for Byzantine Research.
And that background, that specific background, is really crucial. You see, many Western historians, they approach history from, well, a European or maybe an Atlantic viewpoint. Frankopan, though, his specialty is the Byzantine Empire, centered on Constantinople, modern Istanbul.
Which is the ultimate historical gateway, right?
Yeah.
Between continents.
Precisely. So he's looking at world events from the crossroads, looking outward. He's a specialist in the actual historical heartland.
So he's not an outsider looking in. He's positioned right at the pivot point.
Yeah, exactly. He's not trying to peer into Asia from the outside. He's looking out from that pivotal junction that, you know, facilitated all this trade and exchange of ideas for centuries.
And his ability to pull it all together seems incredible. You mentioned his scholarly edge comes from knowing multiple languages,
yes.
Russian, Arabic.
Mm-hmm. That's key.
So he can go way beyond the standard European sources, right?
Sure.
He's weaving together Chinese, Persian, Arab, European accounts.
Creating this genuinely global tapestry. It's something few historians have the linguistic toolkit to really achieve on this scale.
Okay, let's get into the core argument of this huge book,
yeah.
Two Millennia of History.
Mm-hmm.
What's the revolutionary thesis here?
The central idea, really, is that the true engine of global development, culture, power for most of history was this Silk Roads region, Central Asia, Persia, the Middle East. Frankopan directly challenges that that comforting story we often get. You know, classical antiquity leads to the Renaissance, leads to Western dominance. That neat line.
So the rise of the West, the thing we treat almost like historical destiny.
Yeah.
He's saying that was actually much more recent and kind of peripheral on the grand timeline.
Exactly. Recent, temporary, peripheral. He argues the West's eventual dominance wasn't some inherent superiority, but largely a reaction, a kind of desperate strategic move, actually.
Reaction to what?
To gain access to the immense wealth and knowledge that was already concentrated along the Silk Roads. So the book's purpose, really, is to show that today's geopolitical flashpoints, they're just the latest chapters in these ancient patterns playing out along the exact same essential routes.
Wow. Okay. That sets the stage perfectly.
Yeah.
So let's dive into that historical journey. We're often taught Rome was the center of the world, but Frankopan says, no, the story starts further east with connectivity.
Right. It really starts with the Persian empires. Long before Rome dominated the Mediterranean, you had the Achaemenid Empire, the first great Persian empire. They'd already built massive infrastructure like the Royal Road connecting their huge domains. That set the standard, really, for connectivity.
And Alexander the Great comes in later and sort of fuses the Greek and Asian worlds.
He accelerates it, yeah. Fuses Greek, Persian, Asian elements. But the foundation was there.
Okay, so where does Rome fit in? It's hard for me to picture Rome, you know, the Roman Empire, as just a customer in this system. How does he back that up?
Well, he positions Rome as the Western endpoint, the terminus, not the master of the network. They had this insatiable demand for Eastern luxuries.
Like Chinese silk, Indian spices, Persian carpets, all that stuff.
Exactly. But Frangipane points out, and this is critical, the West simply didn't produce much that the East really wanted or needed in return, not in equal value.
Which means they had to pay in cash, gold and silver.
Yes. Roman gold and silver were literally flowing eastward constantly to pay for these goods. This created a massive chronic trade imbalance that went on for centuries.
So Rome wasn't really a global conqueror in this context, but more like a wealthy customer running up a huge bill.
Essentially, yeah. A deeply indebted client state for luxury goods, in Frangipane's view. That's a huge shift from how we usually think about Roman power. And that pattern, that flow of wealth eastward, it continues through the Middle Ages. Then around the year 1000, maybe a bit earlier, the axis shifts dramatically again. With the rise of Islam, the caliphates, these huge Islamic empires following Prophet Muhammad, they fundamentally recentered the known world around the Middle East.
Right. So while Europe was, you know, slogging through what we often call the Dark Ages, cities like Baghdad were becoming these incredible global centers. Science, math, philosophy, commerce. The action was definitely east of the Mediterranean.
Undeniably. The flow of knowledge, power, wealth, it was centered there. And then come the Mongols.
Ah, yes. Usually taught as just, you know, hordes and destruction.
There certainly was, no doubt.
Yeah.
But Frangipane highlights the paradox. The Mongol conquests also led to the Pax Mongolica, the Mongol peace.
So despite all the initial brutality, they unified this vast continent under one rule. More or less.
Yes, a single, pretty efficient security and administrative system for its time. And this created the largest contiguous free trade zone the world had ever seen.
Making trade across Eurasia super efficient, a kind of medieval globalization peak.
You could call it that. But that very interconnectedness, that efficiency, it had a terrifying downside.
Oh, well.
That same unified network that allowed goods and ideas to travel safely, it also allowed the Black Death to spread with devastating speed and efficiency.
Oh, wow. So it traveled right along those trade routes.
Whoa.
Exactly. Shaking the foundations of societies from China to Europe, it really shows how interconnectedness is always, always a double-edged sword.
Which brings us to the moment many of us think of as the start of modern history, the European Age of Discovery, Columbus, Vasco da Gama. But if we follow Frangipane's logic, this wasn't really about pure innovation or curiosity. It was a reaction.
Precisely. It was a reaction to being marginalized. Think about it. The Mongol Empire eventually collapses. Then you get the rise of these really powerful Ottoman and Safavid empires in the 15th century. And they effectively slam the door shut on Europe's direct land access to Asia.
Okay. So the traditional routes, the Silk Roads, were now controlled by these powerful Muslim middlemen.
Right. Making Asian luxuries either incredibly expensive for Europeans or just impossible to get directly. Europe was feeling cut off, sidelined.
So Frangipane argues that the great European voyages, Columbus sailing west, Da Gama going around Africa, these weren't driven by some spontaneous spirit of adventure.
Less that and more by desperate strategic necessity. They had to find a maritime back door to the wealth of the East because the front door was closed.
So Columbus wasn't just exploring. He was trying to find a workaround, trying to bypass the established powers controlling the Silk Roads.
That's the argument. It reframes him as a symptom of Europe's relative weakness at that moment, not just a pioneer of its strength.
Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Now, this struggle for control, it shifts over time, right?
Yeah.
From just bypassing the land routes to actually controlling the resources on them.
Yes. Fast forward to the modern era, the 19th century great game between Britain and Russia.
That rivalry in Central Asia.
It was fundamentally a territorial struggle for control over that Central Asian heartland and its trade routes. Strategic positioning.
And then something changes the game entirely.
Oil. The discovery of vast oil reserves in Persia, modern-day Iran, around the turn of the 20th century, that just transforms the entire geopolitical calculation. Suddenly, the land itself holds immense resource value.
Which changes how we should maybe understand even bigger conflicts, like World War I.
Absolutely. In Frangipane's framework, WWI isn't just a European family feud that got out of hand. It becomes a global struggle for control over the resources and territories of the collapsing Ottoman Empire.
Like securing access to the oil fields in Mesopotamia, which is modern Iraq.
Exactly. Control the oil, control the routes, control the future. It's about securing those critical resources located right on that ancient pivot point. And, well, this brings us right up to today. China's Belt and Road Initiative, the BRI.
The New Silk Road.
It's the conscious, deliberate physical and economic reconstruction of this ancient network billions, maybe trillions being invested.
It's like the ultimate signal that the world's center of gravity really is shifting back east. Or maybe just returning to where it was for most of history.
It suggests a return to the historical norm, yes.
The consistency of these patterns is just incredible. Okay, let's try to distill this. What are the really key themes we should take away? Hmm. The big messages that demand we rethink things.
I think the first, and maybe the most fundamental, is the direct challenge to Eurocentrism. The core idea. For most of recorded history, Europe was the periphery, its period of global dominance. That was, historically speaking, a temporary anomaly, driven in large part by finally figuring out how to access the riches of the more advanced East.
Which forces us really to shed those ingrained assumptions about Western historical inevitability, right?
Hmm.
It suggests that what's happening today, this shift eastward, isn't a weird deviation, but maybe a correction back towards the historical mean.
That's a good way to put it, a correction. The second big theme is that interconnectedness is a double-edged sword. We saw that with the Black Death. The Silk Road spread knowledge, art, religion, commerce, fantastic things. But they were equally effective pathways for destruction, violence like the Mongol invasions, and yes, devastating diseases.
So globalization isn't new. And it's never been purely positive or negative. It always comes with risks and rewards bundled together.
Always. And the third key theme, which runs through the entire book, is that history, fundamentally, is about the control of resources and routes. The specific prize changes. Maybe it's silk and spices first, then control of the physical roads themselves. Now it's oil, energy, lithium, strategic shipping lanes.
But the underlying struggle remains the same.
Exactly. The players change, the technology changes, but the map of power keeps centering back on these crucial routes, and the resources found along them or transported through them.
Frankopan is really good at capturing these huge ideas in, like, potent phrases that stick with you. I know you noted down a few key ones.
Yeah, there are some lines that just sort of crystallize the whole argument.
One that really helps you visually remap history in your head is, for most of human history, the centers of civilization lay along the spine of Asia. Not the edges of Western Europe.
That just forces you to redraw your mental map, doesn't it? And related to that, another powerful idea emphasizes the non-material aspect. The paths that carried silk and spices were the very same paths that carried Buddhism, Christianity, and Islam. The battle for men's souls was fought and won along these roads long before the battle for their markets.
Hmm. That's fascinating. It highlights that ideas, religions, philosophies, these were massive geopolitical forces traveling the same network, not just things to buy and sell.
Right. Ideas as cargo. And then there's the one that provides that essential context for today's news.
This one really hits home. The modern conflicts in Iraq, Iran, and Afghanistan are not new. They are the latest chapters in a 2,000-year-old struggle for control of the world's pivot point.
Puts things in perspective, doesn't it? Every headline you read about that region suddenly has this deep historical echo.
Which leads us right into the real-life applications.
Hmm.
How does this historical lens actually change how we see the world day to day?
Well, first, it gives you a much more informed geopolitical understanding. Like we just said, when you read about China's BRI or tensions in the Strait of Hormuz or instability in Central Asia, you don't just see an isolated crisis anymore. You see it as part of this incredibly long 2,000-year struggle for control over the world's most critical crossroads. It explains why these regions are perennial flashpoints.
And for people in business or finance, there's a big lesson here too, right? About supply chains.
Absolutely. This history screams the timeless importance of understanding and managing supply chain risk. Geopolitical instability in key transit zones, think the Suez Canal blockage recently, or threats in the Red Sea.
Yeah, those had immediate global impact.
Exactly. They have immediate cascading global economic effects. So understanding the historical vulnerability of these choke points, these routes, it's just crucial for strategic planning and risk assessment.
And maybe at a more personal level,
mm-hmm.
How does it shift our perspective?
I think it really encourages us to decenter our own worldview. To challenge those maybe unconscious assumptions about Western exceptionalism or historical importance. And it pushes you towards maybe a deeper appreciation for the immense contributions and complexities of Persian, Arab, Turkic, Indian, Chinese cultures throughout history. It broadens your view.
Definitely. So reflecting back on the whole thing, what was the most surprising thing for you? or the biggest takeaway?
For me, I think it was that reframing of Rome, seeing the mighty Roman Empire, not just as a conqueror, but also as this massive consumer running a huge trade deficit with the East, thinking of them almost as a client state for luxury goods, that really undermines the standard heroic narrative of Roman economic self-sufficiency and power. It just stuck with me.
Yeah, that's powerful. For me, I think it was the reframing of the age of exploration. You know, we grew up celebrating Columbus and Da Gama as these bold innovators, symbols of progress. But Frankopan makes such a compelling case that their voyages were actually driven by desperation, by strategic necessity.
Mm.
Europe was trying to find a way around the real centers of wealth and power at the time. It completely flips the script on that whole era.
It really does.
I guess my final takeaway is just how much this book acts as a paradigm shift. It gives you this powerful long-term framework.
Yeah, and it suggests that the current shifts we're seeing, the move back towards the importance of these Silk Road regions, it's not something entirely new or unprecedented. It's actually, in the grand scheme of things, a return to the historical norm. And that helps make sense of the present and maybe even anticipate the future a little better.
A return to the norm. That's a great thought to end on. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ecatra Foundation.